Welcome to Nicosia Uncut. Hello, Andromahi.
Hello, Kemal.
This is the first time we have been recording this episode in the same space. Generally, we do it online after a very long time. And of course, we have been discussing about the Cyprus problem and what happened after the election of Tufan Erhürman in our previous episode. But, you know, between that time and now, we also had the leaders meeting with the United Nations Special Envoy. There is a joint statement. And so how do you see things now?
I think things are good. I believe that we need to be in a position to say that the outcome of the meeting between the leaders and the UN Secretary General Envoy, Mrs. Olguin, was a successful one. A successful one in what premise? In the premise that we had for the first time after a while a reference to political equality. So for a very long time, the Turkish Cypriot community was shielding itself behind the term sovereign equality. Now we have the term political equality coined in a joint statement between the two sides. And of course, in this way, you also have the Greek Cypriot community committing to it explicitly. This has been the case at least since 2019. If you remember the joint communique after the meeting between Mustafa Akinci and Nikos Anastasiadis in Berlin in November 2019, was also explicitly mentioning political equality. Then we had that pause basically for in the years that Tatar was in charge. And now we have a return to the concept of political equality. But of course, this is also where the big questions start, because for a long time we have been saying that political equality is the key, and it is the key to unlocking a series of things. And we are waiting to see whether this commitment that is expressed by the Greek Cypriot leader will also be substantiated in terms of the negotiations and everything. But we need to be in a position to appreciate that it was successful to coin this. The two leaders discussed confidence building measures as well. If you remember in this podcast, we had been pretty critical of the fact that the leaders had to go to a five-party conference in order to discuss things that have to do with Cyprus. So we see this actually going back on track again. We see these discussions taking place in Cyprus. This is evidently something that Tufan Erhürman is seeking. I mean, he has placed it in the center of his approach, let's say. And there is this expectation that there could be a discussion about a five-party conference in 2026, but it is clearly postponed for then.
I think one of the most obvious feature of the new phase, if I may, is the fact that Turkish Cypriots are really working on a tightrope. I think for the first time in the history of the talks, there is an open and transparent and accepted difference between the positions of Turkey and the Turkish Cypriots. Now, of course, the sides, and when I say the sides, this time I'm talking about Turkish and Turkish Cypriot sides, are trying to use this very sensitive language and political ambiguity. And in a way, for example, when Erhürman visited Erdogan, their statements did not match. But it was designed in a way that, you know, two sides were in their you know, in the center of their own positions. They didn't stress the difference. And clearly, there is some space for Erhürman to play. So he's very careful with his wordings. There has been a lot of argument about the fact that BBF is not in the statement, that he didn't use the word federal. But clearly, one of his famous 4 points is about previous convergences. And what does it mean? I mean, convergences on what? It is clear that when we are talking about political equality, as defined in the United Nations resolutions, we are talking about a type of political equality that is required by a federal solution. Now, Turkey continues to insist that the Greek Cypriots do not want to share power with the Turkish Cypriots. Now, we all know the historical context. There are concerns whether it will be equality or whether it will be a veto mechanism. I mean, many Greek Cypriots, I think, see Turkish Cypriots' participation in the decision-making is some sort of a veto mechanism because they see it in a negative light. And I think it is possible for the Greek Cypriot leadership to come up and say that, no, that's not true. We are ready to share power with the Turkish Cypriots. And everybody understands that we are not talking about numerical equality, but as defined in the United Nations resolution, participation of Turkish Cypriots in all decisions, basically participation of both communities in all decisions. How do you see the position of the Greek Cypriot leadership and the Greek Cypriot public opinion, their perception and their understanding of Turkish Cypriot participation, equal participation in the decision makings, or simply in a layman's words, is it true that the Greek Cypriots do not want to share power with the Turkish Cypriots?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Kemal. And one could say that it's one of the very big issues of the Cyprus problem, if we are to be honest. I think in general, currently, we are at this stage of constructive ambiguity. And there is the goodwill, and we need to credit both sides, that there is the goodwill to play with this constructive ambiguity. If we look at the joint communique after the meeting between the leaders and Mrs. Olguin, there was this reference to the fact that we are aiming for a solution to the Cyprus problem with political equality as per the UN Security Council resolutions. There was no mention to a BBF or to a federation, as you said. The Greek Cypriot side could claim that there is a reference to UN Security Council resolutions, therefore saying to its people, look, we are guarded. At the same time, the Turkish Cypriot side could say we have a clear reference to political equality as per the UN Security Council resolutions. So they could also sell it to their own community. So we are at that stage in the game currently. As about your question about to what extent the Greek Cypriot side is ready to share power, I really think that this is yet to be seen, to be honest. As we've said before, Mr. Christodoulidis ticks the boxes when it comes to what he has to do in the framework of negotiations. He meets the leader, he meets the UN Secretary General, the UN Special Envoy. He plays along. The question is, if he's willing to take it a step further, the question is if he's willing to embrace this in the way he governs and in the way he speaks. And the question also is if he is willing to show this on the table of negotiations. We have discussed this in private, Kemal, and we have it. We kind of disagree to some extent on this issue. And the issue is, so let me give you the picture. So we have Mr. Erhurman. His strategy now is he comes forward and he said that in the press conference after the meeting with Mr. Christodoulidis, he said that he wants to make sure that political equality is approved. He wants to make sure that the positive vote is approved. And that's one part of what needs to be established and approved before we move on. One could say, however, and I'm very, very stressed as to how this will work out. One could say, however, that yes, political equality is acknowledged, but for instance, the issue of positive vote and rotating presidency, it has been mentioned as part of the Guterres framework, that in which, what was the Guterres framework? It was an attempt to give something to each side in order to basically find a way to move on after the realization of the UN Secretary General that unless these thorny issues were put in a package, they couldn't be solved independently. Mr. Erhurman is trying to go a step further from here. And he's trying to gain, let's say, rotating presidency without discussing other aspects of the framework, which for the Greek Cypriot side, I would say that in particular, it would be the fact that the security of one side cannot come at the detriment of the other side, which brought along with it the concept of the understanding by the UN Secretary General that the right of intervention is no longer sustainable. What will Mr. Erhurman say if Mr. Christodoulidis decides to play that card? Because if Mr. Christodoulidis decides to be a bit more going by the book, let's say, he might come up and say, look, this is not, I mean, the Guterres framework included everything together. We need to discuss the package. We cannot be picking and choosing from there. So what is your view on this? Knowing the Greek Cypriot side, I believe that the strategy by Erhurman could be, even though I see it and I see what he's trying to do, it could allow the Greek Cypriot side to find an argument and potentially a way out in the face of the Greek Cypriot community.
The historical talks have proven us that each and every time there is a collapse in the talks, next time they start again, the Turkish Cypriots up their hands. And the discussions about unification back in 1977 and 79 were very different than the discussions that we are having now. So we need to understand two things. First of all, this is thanks to Mr. Anastasiadis. It was him who went and say to the Turkish foreign minister, allegedly, let's say, okay, that the Greek Cypriots do not want to share power with the Turkish Cypriots. They don't even want to share their hospitals. This is the quote-unquote expression. And then he went on and said that let's discuss the two-state solution after the elections. This is 2017. Now, this has been pocketed by Turkey, and it also created a lot of headache because it was kind of for the Turkish side, a genuine acceptance of the fact that the Greek Cypriots are not prepared to share powers in a federal settlement. This enhanced their conviction. This gave in to them. So this is also another example how a leader-led process, two words coming out from a leader's mouth, can change the course of history of the talks. Now, Turkish Cypriot side, regardless of whether they trust Christodoulidis or not, they have this conviction that the Greek Cypriots will always run away the last minute when they discuss business. Whether this is true or not, it's another discussion. But there is this conviction, especially after 2004 and 2017, that the Greek Cypriots will eventually be turning the wheel towards another direction the very last minute. And this is what Erhurman is trying to stop. Picking and choosing Guterres framework, maybe. But I think it's also it also shows that we need a very skilled diplomacy from the United Nations side to put things in a context in a way that will be acceptable by both sides, to be able to tie the wires in a way, connect the wires in a way that will be palatable and acceptable by both sides. And now we are at a stage that we are actually discussing parts of the Guterres framework. I like to underline the fact that nothing that has been discussed so far is outside the Guterres framework. I think the Pandora's box will open when it comes to the security and guarantees chapter, because there is a very clear understanding, at least from what they have been saying, that the leaders are on a different position. They don't share anything common in that chapter. Now, I can even say that the position of Mr. Erhurman is even more, let's say, from a Greek Cypriot perspective, conservative than Mr. Akıncı. But we are still trying to come to that stage. Everybody knows and understands that. I think this is the most important part of the discussions. And once this ever will be overcome, we'll find ourselves in the new chapter.
Look, one could say here, and if we are to be honest, I mean, it's been 8 years since the Guterres framework, and some aspects of the Guterres framework are not viable, like the, for instance, the population ratio for the day after the solution, that there was an understanding up to there about the numbers as well. Those numbers are not viable today. So one could say that when you are the losing side, and I am referring to the Greek Cypriot community when it comes to the fact that they don't have control over the north.
The time is working against both communities.
Of course, the time is working against you. Exactly. Yes. It's also working against the Turkish Cypriot community for other issues. But the issue here is, I think what it will come down to is the goodwill. I'm not sure the goodwill will allow us to sustain a lot of pressure that I expect to see, especially in the coming months. So my understanding and the way I read things is that we are not going to have something major before the end of the Republic of Cyprus presidency in the EU and before the elections in the Republic of Cyprus.
Oh, that's given. Everybody's, I think, agrees on that.
So, but the question is, what will happen in this period, whether it will be a make or break scenario, because we could be faced with a scenario in which after all of this is done, we will have a climax in July or August on the Cyprus problem. It could be a high-level conference in which things could close, etc. But it could also be that this period acts as a break period if the sides conflict on things. So why am I saying this? I'm saying this because you have the presidency. Are the EU leaders going to be coming to Cyprus and be taken to the buffer zone to be looking through a hole in the north? I'm asking because these are issues that I expect to see being raised.
I think it's a good opportunity for European leaders to actually get engaged in a positive way. They might try to talk to Mr. Erhurman and then give a positive message. And then it will also help Mr. Erhurman to get some benefit out of this, of course. I mean, it's a good chance for everyone to use this time in a positive...
Do you really have faith that this will happen? Do you really believe that this will happen?
Well, previously we had the European Union leaders, commissioners and, you know, the presidents to visit the Turkish Cypriot leaders. And it is possible. I think it also depends on the ability of the Turkish Cypriot side to reach them. I mean, we know that many diplomats were not enthusiastic to go and visit Mr. Tatar, the former Turkish Cypriot leader. This is not the case. We see many photos. The diplomats are visiting Mr. Erhurman, and they're getting engaged, and probably they will try to support them. I think Andromache. I think there is some sort of a general agreement these days that I hear from everyone that it will be the international community, the big powers, that will actually be deciding on the fate of the talks. And there is no belief in the Cypriot leaders to handle things by themselves. There might be belief in certain aspects of their leaderships. However, everybody understands and acknowledges that it's up to the international community, guarantor powers, but also countries like US, right, to play this role, whether, maybe NATO bureaucracy and all that. Now, the question is, of course, whether the Greek Cypriot side will be prepared to take such a diplomatic pressure on them, because I think such a pressure will successfully be handled by Turkey, together with Turkish Cypriot side, when it comes from abroad. And I think Turkey will be playing the leading role in these kind of give and take, if there will be any. I wonder if the Greek Cypriot side is prepared for that. I don't know whether Greece will be interested to get engaged as the way they did in Crans Montana and Montpellieran. So how do you see? I mean, we discussed a little bit and we have kind of agreed that Christodoulidis doesn't have a lot of room to escape from such a manipulation or pressure or push from the international community, especially from
America. Yeah, to be honest, I don't believe that Christodoulidis is acting with any kind of strategy, to be honest. And for an objective observer, Erhurman has come in more with... You can feel from Erhurman that there is some place where he wants to take things. With Christodoulidis, I'm not certain about this. I think that he's more comfortable in opportunistic so-called alliances or, getting well with the Americans, for instance, or the Israelis or whatever. But I don't think that he has a strategy as to how he positions himself when it comes to the Cyprus problem. And I want to give an example. It's kind of a high-level example, but I think it goes to show how confused some things are in Christodoulidis' mind, or how he just wants to play with the Greek Cypriot psyche, let's say. So you're talking about a leader who got voted in, and he had been clear prior to the elections that he's not interested in joining NATO because he said this is not the time. So this guy now comes in and suddenly he turns NATO into the cornerstone of what he wants for some reason, especially at a time when you have discussions about the EU defense and security mechanism. He could be pushing for that, but no, he pushes for NATO for some reason and partnership for peace. So what did he do? He had this interview in Politico the other day in which he said something that I cannot see how it makes sense. He says, we are willing to make steps when it comes to Turkish-EU relations as long as we are allowed to join the Partnership for Peace program of NATO. So he comes and he mixes two things, EU and NATO. And why? Why do you do that? If you want to use your leverage for something, why do you do it in the face of NATO and you don't do it in the face of the Cyprus problem solution? You were the one who had said that we were a step before the solution in Grand Montana. You were the one who was saying how close we were especially now that you have a Turkish Cypriot leader with whom you could engage in more constructive ways. Why are you passing the ball forward with no intention to score a goal? He just do it, in football terms, he just does random passes without intending to actually score. And you are reading the interview and you're like, what is this that you're trying to say? If you want to make a point out of the EU defense and security mechanism and come forward and say, I don't mind if Turkey joins the EU defense and security mechanism as long as we can solve the Cyprus problem. Make a connection to something that will bring a solution to the problem and not entering the partnership for peace, whatever.
Well, I think he's trying to, we all agree on that, I think, show himself as the brilliant diplomat of a strategic country. And this is not the case. I mean, Cyprus is a very small country. It's an island state. And, yes, a member of the European Union. And yes, there is some leverage that they can, of course, always play. But trying to get into engagement with Turkey, like in bargaining, on the grounds as if he's representing the entire European Union and that he's like he has all the powers and he's the key to... Yes, I mean, he has some powers and he has some ability to facilitate things, maybe. But in the long run, in the world that we are living in, when security dimension is very important, I don't think that the big countries or even the members of the European Union will really want to see Cyprus becoming an obstacle to their plans, especially when we are talking about security in East Med and on this part, southern corner of Europe. And but I think at the end of the day, it all boils down to the fact that Cyprus continues to be a headache in the area, whether it's a big headache or a small headache or a potential headache, it's another discussion. But one thing for sure is that the energy, the hydrocarbons around Cyprus, doesn't really worth the hassle as much as we thought that they would. I mean, if you look at the energy supplies, the LNG supplies all around the world, American supplies are increasing, and there are small LNG stations everywhere in the world these days. I don't think that it really, I mean, people will, I don't think any country will see it as the cornerstone of the global energy formulation anytime soon. So I don't see Republic of Cyprus becoming that important in that aspect. However, I think it is important. Cyprus is important in the security arrangement in this area. I don't know what if you want to say anything about this energy.
No, I agree on this. And I think that we are running the risk currently to actually be set aside from development, especially if other countries proceed to mending their differences and everything. If Cyprus cannot present itself there as a player that can be constructive, and we present ourselves again as someone who just tries to waste time, I think that... In all honesty, especially after the interview by Mr. Christodoulidis in Politico, I really think that European leaders would be laughing. They would be laughing because it's so obvious that what we are trying to do, we are trying to delay things again. And this comes at a time in which, and I think it's important to mention it because it often gets lost from the discussion. So you had some interviews by Mrs. Olguin the past week, some very important interviews. In the interviews, she mentioned explicitly that the current discussions are not discussions on substance, they are discussions as to the methodology with which a future recommencement of negotiations could be shaped. So they are discussing if it's going to be a time frame. They are discussing where they're starting from. They're discussing if there's going to be mediation, arbitration. That's what we understand from that. So we are at that stage now. And then we have, you know, the Republic of Cyprus president doesn't seem to show any urgency, and he doesn't seem to be in a position to put the Cyprus problem in what we have said so many times before in the context of a solution to wider problems. Because we've said many times that the Cyprus problem cannot be solved. It is no longer an issue. As you said before, even the hydrocarbons, we played that card, it got exhausted. It is no longer an issue that, especially at a time when the world is collapsing, the Cyprus problem is not an issue that raises the alarm bells for the international community. It will only be important if it comes in the context of solving issues in a wider context, solving issues that have to do with the Eastern Mediterranean, that have to do with the relations between members of the region, rather than, oh, let's solve the Cyprus problem for the sake of Greek Cypriots.
On that note, tell me two things. One, we have seen two photos. One, in one photo, we have Israel, Republic of Cyprus, and Greece. And then the other photo, we have France and Republic of Cyprus. Now, Christodoulidis is trying to prove himself as a skilled diplomat, trying to make all these arrangements, key to the international formulations. I have read articles in the Greek Cypriot press that let's accept it. This is really a success story. So, first of all, what does it mean to have all these kind of arrangements? Do they really mean anything, or is it just a little bit of a show off? Like, how do you want to comment on those?
I think sometimes I am too cynical for this, but I think Christodoulidis will milk the presidency in every way he can. So all these meetings with these high level leaders, evidently he will milk it. I am really not convinced, though, that the international leaders, especially Germany and France, France knows that they have to profit from our defense arrangements. They know that they have the naval base in Mali and we are giving them space there and everything. But then you have Germany that has made it clear that it wants Turkey in the EU defense and security mechanism. How do you alleviate their concerns? So I think Christodoulidis, this presidency has come at a crucial stage for him because he can present himself as very important. But as I always say, the question is, what is your end goal out of all of this? It's the same that we say about the relationship with Israel, about the relationship with the US. it's okay to be claiming that we are at the best state of our relationship with the US, for instance, but the question is, where is it that we want to go? How do we want to use that relationship in order to proceed? Do we want to use that relationship in order to facilitate a solution to our benefit, or do we want to use that relationship in order to be feeding the Greek Cypriot party, in order to be feeding the Greek Cypriot public illusions about geopolitical dominance and importance? And I am very sad because I don't see a strategy in terms of solving the issue. I just see a strategy of managing things, of selling to the Greek Cypriots illusions of importance, an importance that, I mean, in the case of the US, we are still to see what's going to happen there. But in the case of the EU and the presidency, yes, it's important. You are the leader of the EU for 6 months, but it's a rotating presidency. It's mostly administrative. Substantially, how do you use it in order to promote what it is that you want
Yes, but these two photos were mainly about security, about the defense, about helping each other. First of all, personally, I don't think that it's a good photo for any leader to be in the same photo with Netanyahu. I mean, strategically, it might mean anything, I don't know. But for public diplomacy, I don't think that anybody will appreciate to see their leader in the same photo with Mr. Netanyahu when he's accused of war crimes. This is one discussion. Turkey has been seeing it as some kind of an hostile action because he saw it as an opportunity for Israel to bring together all, let's say, enemies of Turkey, if I may. And two, with France, you're both EU members anyway, like defense strategy. We know that French are all over the place. Also, they have relations with Cyprus too. One other international aspect is the fact that now we have the vertical corridor, which means that Americans are planning to sell energy to Greece and then from Greece to Romania, to Bulgaria, Romania, Moldova, and then to Ukraine, and to actually get the best out of this opportunity that, you know, filling in the gap that was emptied by Russia. Now, Americans also are planning or making deals to sell energy to Turkey as well. And Barack, the super diplomat of Americans in the region.
And a friend of Trump.
Yes. And I have been making statements that, you know, we want this. We discussed this in the previous episode, that they see Cyprus as an apse, as a pain in the neck. And I'm not suggesting that this is itself enough to solve the Cyprus problem, but clearly nobody wants a headache on this part of the world. And I think it is important for the Cypriot leaders to be true leaders and explain their public opinions, their people. Look, there is this critical stage that we are in. There are regional arrangements. We need to make sure that we solve our national problem and whatever, and then we move forward. And I don't see it happening for, you know, internal reasons.
Two comments on this. First, on the security issue in Israel, I honestly think that the Republic of Cyprus government has undermined all its strategy on the international fora for the past 60 years with its stance towards Israel. Honestly, we had a recent vote on the Golan Heights and the Republic of Cyprus abstained. Like, it's mind-blowing. They are undermining everything we have worked on for so many years and our international standing and our support to international law. If I were another European country that cares about what is happening in Gaza, I would turn to the Greek Cypriots and tell them, so you want solidarity for your issues, but you're not willing to give, to apply the same principles, what is happening in Gaza and in the face of Israel. This is mockery, honestly. So one thing is that. The second thing, I think it's important when it comes to the energy deals and everything, it is important to put in the context that if a problem seems so intractable that it cannot be solved, the internationals, they're not going to spend any political capital on actually trying to solve it. What they're going to do is they're going to attempt to sideline it, or they're going to attempt to patch it, basically, to find a way for the sides to work together in order for the whatever deal to proceed. So we had this in the case of Israel and Lebanon, countries that are practically still at war, but you had a push towards energy deals in order to get some things out of the question. So the question is, could the Cyprus problem go from being one step before a solution, as per Nikos Christodoulidis, to being considered an intractable problem and be sidelined in order to have finally an energy deal? Because in this picture that you presented before about the US, we need to also include that you have US companies, Chevron, buying fields, buying the rights for the exploration of fields in Greece. So they are putting importance in Greece on this issue, and they will want to be in a position to get it done in the relationship with Turkey. So,
in the final part of our podcast, I would like your opinion on, first of all, possible 5+1, the engagement of guarantor powers. On one hand, I'm aligned with the Turkish Cypriot position that unless we have some progress on certain matters, we don't need the guarantors to get engaged, because it creates an example that for every single thing we go to the guarantor powers, this is not, you know, this is not tactful, this is not nice, it hurts me as a Cypriot. But I understand that Turkey is also a key figure, especially these days in this period of the Cyprus talks. So it is important to get engaged with Turkey as well. And so how do you see the possibility of 5+1 and the importance of 5+1 and what they will be discussing possibly in 5+1? This is one. Number two, the so-called confidence building measures, or the measures on the ground, like crossing points, like mixed marriages, you know, or, you know, Greek Cypriots want a double VAT issue to be handled when it comes to the Green Line. So there are those issues that have been publicly announced. And whether do you see the potential of the leaders to address this? And last but not least, do you agree that after the end of the Cyprus presidency, after June, we might be seeing a window of opportunity? So three things.
So I think that for the 5+1, to be honest, I will not be surprised if there is no 5+1 before the end of the presidency. Yes, I think they will try to keep things moving, but I will not be surprised if we don't reach there. And if there is this sense that, okay, let's wait for after the presidency. And I will also not be surprised if there is a climax in after June. Having said that, I will also not be surprised if absolutely nothing happens, and if this period of the presidency, as I said before, is actually used as a break it scenario, and we're just gonna have, you know, patches all around the Cyprus problem. As about the confidence building measures, Kemal, you have a Greek Cypriot community that is discussing opening more crossing points, let's say, and at the same time, you are going to have the restart of the Imagine program for the Greek Cypriot community, making sure that there is no capacity for the students to be going to the north. So I will insist on challenging the commitment, the true commitment towards this, the true and profound commitment that we need to make this work out. And I am yet to see this. Having said that, I also expect from Mr. Erhurman, and I think Doge Deria had made a statement at some point on this issue. I know where he's coming from. I know that he has a lot of pressure. I know that he's on a balancing act. I know that he's now the leader of the Turkish Cypriots, and he needs to be, you know, he needs to make them see that he represents them. But at the same time, I would like to hear him speak more as a leader who truly believes in a solution and who truly believes in peace on the island, and I would expect some moves from him as
to
well.
To make statements to the Greek, for the Greek Cypriot psyche.
To make statements that show that he can be a leader...
in a united country.
Yes, understands everyone. And like, for instance, I cannot see why he has not come forward to say that we are relaunching the Imagine program. I think that unless he does this, he will have this as a plague on top of him, to be honest. It was a very successful CBM. It was funded by the Germans. He wants to get the seal of approval by the internationals that he means business. Do it. To fun, you know, give it, and it's gonna be a huge plus for the international community as well. We are talking about a project funded by Germany. It would be to his advantage as well, and of course to the advantage of everyone who believes in this. And in all honesty, it would also bring the Greek Cypriot community that is acting comfortably now, accusing the other side of not restarting it. It will force them to also position themselves. So I expect him to start making moves that allow him to think in this respect as well. Having said that, Mr. Akinci, if he hears us, it's a very, very big precedent because we are all thinking of Mustafa Akinci when we are thinking of this, and maybe we're being unfair as to what we are expecting.
You have this expression in Greek language, like the bird has flown. Which means the train has left the station. But look, it's a different stage.
Look, it's a different
period.
I'm always trying to be pragmatic, and I see what Tufan is doing, but yes. I still think that from his strategy, you have this piece move missing. I know he wants to see more from the Greek Cypriot community, I know, but I think that when we are asking from the Greek Cypriot leader to take advantage of the fact that he has a more positive leader in the north and we are pushing him for more, I think Tufan also has to give something when it comes to that in order to grasp the hearts and minds of people and to really be more supportive of what he tries to do.
Mr. Erdogan, here is a message from a pro-solution Greek Cypriot, somebody who really committed all her life to unification and peace in Cyprus. And it's good that we also appreciate and understand that we are still enjoying the fact that Mr. Tatar is not there anymore. So even this idea is itself soothing and comforting. And maybe the last message to the diplomatic community in Cyprus. First of all, happy holidays and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. But also, please get more engaged with the two leaders. I think everybody has a role to play in coordination with the United Nations. And here's a message to the international community, but also to the European Union leaders. Get engaged with Mr. Erdogan. He is not for a two-state solution. He is not maybe saying it loud, but he is trying to open the way for a federal solution, or whatever you call it. But at the end of the day, the principles are there, the convergences are there, the UN Security Council resolutions are there, and of course we are not talking about two-state solutions. So help the leaders, get engaged and see what you can do. Everybody has a role to play, whether it's the Imagine Project, whether it's the opening of the crossings, whether it's a dialogue with Turkey and Greece, whether it's coordination of the EU policy within the European Union and aligning it with the United Nations roadmap. And with this, I think we are coming to the last part of our podcast of the last podcast of the year.
Yes, I wish everyone to enjoy their holidays, and let's hope that next year we can start working more on being compassionate and having more solidarity towards each other, more kindness, because I think these are the things that are currently missing from our civic discourse. And let's hope that we soon set aside this stage of darkness in which we are in, and that there is some light at the end of the tunnel, at the end of the day.
We continue to support a united Cyprus and
a democratic country
but we also continue to support a capital which is not cut into two. So
And it's so nice that today we managed to do it in person and, you know, uncutting Nicosia. So it's been enjoyable, Kemal. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.